ऋषिर्वाच एवं गिरित्रा प्रियया विभाषिता प्रहसन् सुहृत्प्रिया संस्मारितो मम विधा कुवर्षु जानाः को विश्वासी जन समक्षता Translation: The great sage Maitreya said, Lord Shiva, the deliverer of the hill Kailash, having been thus addressed by his dear wife, replied smilingly, although at the same time he remembered the malicious, heart-piercing speeches delivered by Daksha before the guardians of the universal affairs. Please repeat. The great sage Maitreya said, Lord Shiva, the deliverer of the hill Kailash, having thus been addressed by his dear wife, replied smilingly. Or at the same time, he remembered the malicious, heart-piercing speeches delivered by Daksha before the guardians of the universal affairs. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. When Lord Shiva heard from his wife about Daksha, the psychological effect was that he immediately remembered the strong words spoken against him in the assembly of the guardians of the universe. And remembering those words, he was sorry at heart. Although, to please his wife, he smiled. In Bhagavad Gita, it is said that a liberated person is always in mental equilibrium in both distress and the happiness of this material world. Therefore, the question may now be raised, why a liberated personality like Lord Shiva was so unhappy because of the words of Daksha? The answer is given by Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. Lord Shiva is Atmarama, or situated in complete self-realization. But because he is the incarnation in charge of the material mode of ignorance, Tamagun, he is sometimes affected by the pleasure and pain of the material world. The difference between the pleasure and pain of this material world and that of the spiritual world is that in the spiritual world, the effect is qualitatively absolute. Therefore, one may feel sorry in the absolute world, but the manifestation of so-called pain is always full of bliss. For instance, once Lord Krishna in his childhood was chastised by his mother, Yasoda, and Lord Krishna cried. But although he shed tears from his eyes, this is not to be considered a reaction of the mode of ignorance. For the incident was full of transcendental pleasure. When Krishna was playing in so many ways, sometimes it appeared that he caused distress to the gopis, but actually such dealings were full of transcendental bliss. That is the difference between the material and spiritual worlds. The spiritual world, where everything is pure, is pervertedly reflected in this material world. Since everything in the spiritual world is absolute, since everything in the spiritual world is absolute in the spiritual varieties of apparent pleasure and pain, there is no perception other than eternal bliss. Whereas in the material world, because everything is contaminated by the modes of material nature, there are feelings of pleasure and pain. Therefore, because Lord Shiva, although a fully self-realized person, was in charge of the material mode of ignorance, he felt sorrow. And the purport. We read the translations also to 13 and 14. 13 translation. O best of the demigods, how can the body of a daughter remain undisturbed when she hears that some festive event is taking place in her father's house? Even though you may be considering that I have not been invited, There's no harm if one goes to the house of one's friend, husband, spiritual master or father without invitation. Text 14. O immortal Shiva, please be kind towards me and fulfill my desire. You have accepted me as half of your body. Therefore, please show your kindness towards me and accept my request. 15. The great sage Maitreya said, Lord Shiva, the deliverer of the hill Kailash, having thus been addressed by his dear wife, replied smilingly, although at the same time he remembered the malicious, heart-piercing speeches delivered by Daksha before the guardians of the universal affairs. So continuing the long story of the sacrifice by Daksha, the question was asked when this was... I can't remember the speakers... The question was raised because he mentioned how Yaksha performed these great sacrifices. We describe in the Prajapatis the creation of the universe, the creation of the people in the universe. This is what we're describing. We've heard in the second canto also how the Lord Brahma, he does the secondary creation. He creates the living entities to populate the universe. So he creates what we call the Prajapatis, who they're the ones that produce offspring. So originally they're coming from Lord Brahma. And then they begin the work of filling up the universe. So then the question was asked, how come Sati gave up her body in this instance? Now we're getting into the details of of what happened. And as we know that Lord Shiva was insulted by Daksha, who was proud of his position and his social correctness. And this is at least a thousand years later. He's having another yagya, and Sati wants to go to be with her sisters and her friends. Lord Shiva's so she's pleading with Lord Shiva to take her there, and now Lord Shiva will reply. Says Lord Shiva smiled, at the same time he remembered the malicious, heart piercing speeches delivered by Daksha, and he advised her not to go. He said, you'll be it won't be good or auspicious to go. So it seems that, and the reasons he will give not to go, exactly right, exactly what he says happens. It's not that he's seeing the future, but it appears like he's seeing the future, because everything he says comes to pass. That he says, if you go there, you won't be received properly, you'll be insulted, Daksha will insult you because of me, and insults are worse than death. A respectable person. Sati is most respectable. Sati, she's famous in India. Sati means the most chaste. And you won't be able to tolerate that. It came true. She couldn't tolerate the insult. But because she's Sati, then she immolated herself. So even today, when the wife follows her husband on the pyre, funeral pyre, it's illegal now, but occasionally they slip on. That is called sati. They perform sati. So it's coming after sati mata, who was so chaste that she couldn't bear to tolerate the insults of Lord Shiva. And that's recommended, right? If I think we heard yesterday, if one hears the insult of a Vishnu or a great devotee, one should be able to defeat that blasphemy. If not, one should leave that place. And if you can't leave, you should cut off his tongue. Or give up one's life. So here Sati did that. Who could do that? Who could do such a thing? Would you give up your life because someone made an insult to Vishnu or a great devotee? Anyway, she did, because she had a very great connection and love for Lord Shiva. But also now she's setting an example for the whole universe, for the rest of the time. This is the behavior. That's why these Puranas are created. These histories are created there for our reference in the future when there's a dilemma, what to do. Then they will go to the histories, the Puranas, and say, well, in this incident, this is what they did. And there you generally get two or three instances of how to handle a situation somewhere along the line in the different Puranas. So then you know the proper behavior. What is best if you can't do that? What is next best if you can't like this? So she was a great example. Of course, that's the difference between Lord Shiva and Sati. Shiva wasn't affected. He's a little sorry here. Not because necessarily he was insulted, but because Daksha was full. So he's materialist. Although he was perfect in everything, expert in everything, he failed to recognize the governing principle above all else was spiritual advancement. Above all other qualifications, the premier qualification is one's affection for the Lord, one's spiritual advancement. That comes above everything else. Like when the Srimad Bhagavatam was going to be spoken, or the sages were sitting around performing sacrifice, and they were deciding who was going to speak, then Sukadeva Goswami came, and he was only 16 or so. But they immediately recognized his spiritual tejas, and he was offered the seat, even though his guru was there, and demigods were there, and other great personalities were there, who were, by social etiquette, they were senior to him. His father was Vasudeva. Was it there? Vasudeva there? Huh? Vyasadeva. He was there. So even great personalities were there. They recognized here's a person who is qualified to sit there. Because he's nothing to do with this material world. So whatever he says, there will be no bias. Well, his bias will be Krishna's bias. So bias is okay as long as you've got the right bias. So some people say, well, you should surrender to Krishna. Well, that's your bias. Yeah, it's a bias. But what's wrong with the bias if it's correct? We're biased to Krishna. So there's nothing wrong with that. If you're on Krishna's party, then you're biased. Naturally. Whoever you're aligned to, then there's a bias there. But if you're aligned to the right person, then you're in the right team, you're in the winning team. So there's nothing wrong with that. Then it's up to one to decide who is the right leader of the team. We listened to one conversation in Caracas, South America. And it's a long conversation. There's two or three, couple of tapes. I don't know who the person was. Hudananda Maharaj was there, and he was translating. But this person was giving all these arguments to kind of Srila Prabhupada, and it was why Prabhupada is saying how you have to hear from the pure source, and the pure source is one that simply repeats, this person was giving so many arguments back, and Prabhupada was giving all the simple explanations. This is a microphone, this is a dictaphone. I'm not an engineer, but I read the instructions. If you press this button, this is how it works. I know how it works. I'm not an engineer. I don't have to know all these things. But because I've accepted the instructions, I know I'm expert at this. I can do this. So if I've heard from my spiritual master, if I've heard from a perfect person, I repeat that, then what I say is also perfect. And everyone else is imperfect. So he said, well, how can we, if I'm imperfect, how can I understand you're perfect? He's giving all these kind of arguments. You say one is imperfect. I mean, how am I going to understand that you're perfect? I said, that you'll have to experiment. You have to find out how imperfect, who is perfect. You'll have to find out yourself. So this thing was going. backwards and forwards like that for a long time. Nobody is really sure who is the correct authority, what is actually right. And especially nowadays, it's not very popular to be absolute. Not very. It means democracy is the word of today. So everyone has equal rights. Everyone has but they stretch it too far. You know, everyone is equal on the spiritual platform. It's okay. Everyone is equal, but on the material platform, everyone is different. Nor the person the same. Even Jananimus and I, we're not the same. We're quite different. Those who know us, although we look quite similar, same mold. But nobody's, everyone is different. There's no such thing as equality on the material platform. But when you get hung up on this idea that yeah, it sounds very nice. Everyone should have an equal opportunity. Everyone, you should respect everyone's space, and it sounds nice, but it's not actual fact. Therefore, you should give the in your works. If you're an employee, you have to employ so many tribal people, or if you have a university, you have to admit so many backward people. And it brings the whole standard of everything down. Just to be, we're equal to everyone. We give everyone an equal chance. Who's born? No one's born with an equal chance. Everyone's different, you see. And everyone's different intelligence. So it's obviously not the same. So if you're going to do that, if you make a kidri, a melting pot, then you're going to get a low-class effect. It's not going to be unalloyed. You're going to mix everything down. Then you're going to get, what are you going to get? Mongrels, right? Bring all the dogs together and keep crossbreeding them all. Then you don't get any thoroughbreds anymore. You just get all these mongrels. No particular line. So that's what it's like. Sentiment. It doesn't actually work. So there is absolute standards, and there's relative standards in this world also. Krishna's divided the human civilization into four civilized, and then there are others which are uncivilized, another six or seven which are uncivilized. That's his categorization, and it's a fact. If you see, if you analyze the different classes of society, then you can see that they're actually different, and how Krishna, the position, the jobs that Krishna has given, the work that Krishna has assigned for those people, is the right service for those kind of people. It's scientific. He knows. Krishna's the producer of the material world. He knows how it runs. And he's made the system how to run it properly. We're not going to improve on that system, obviously. If you don't follow the instructions, you buy some electrical apparatus. If you don't follow the instructions, there's a good chance that you won't get such good usage out of that machine. But if you follow the instructions given by the manufacturer, they know how it works, they made it. They know how to best operate that. Then you can expect a longer life. More, you can do more with it. But if you neglect that, well, why should I follow that instruction? Let me make my own. And so you can experiment like that, but it may not be very... the smartest thing to do. So so the absolute thing was the spiritual advancement. And that was what Daksha failed to recognize, because he was Paka and everything else, imperfect behavior and culture and all those things. He was really proper. But he was just stuck on that dimension. I'm completely correct. Everything I'm doing is correct because it's completely valid. And he can quote a shloka for everything he does. He can back it up by a scripture. Right? So there, it's perfection, right? But he failed to miss that point. What is the point of following all the rules and regulations? What are the point of all these instructions? There's two. Always remember Krishna, know Krishna. Shiva's always remembering Krishna. He mentions next sloka or two. I'm absorbed in meditation on Shankarshan. I don't really want to go to this function. There's a difference. Shiva is Atmarama. He's self-satisfied. Sati wasn't on that level. She wanted to go. She don't go, she's going to miss out. It's a big social event. It's the happening, a big happening in the universe. The biggest thing that was going on in the universe at that particular time. You got to be there if you want to be anyone. You should be anyone who's anyone was there. So she obviously wanted to go there. And she thought she'd be missing something if she didn't go. And Lord Shiva wasn't interested. That means he had something better. And this was the best thing that was going on in the whole universe. Right? The best thing. All the leaders of the universe were there. Most of them. So it was obviously the best thing happening at that time. Shiva wasn't interested. Why? He's got something better than that. he's satisfied in his relationship with Krishna. So, and because of his transcendental situation, he's completely aloof from the material world. He knows exactly how the material world works. Of course, he's in charge of the mode of ignorance also, so especially that. So he's just recollecting what happened there 1,000-odd years ago. He hadn't forgotten. Daksha definitely wouldn't forget. Daksha was really angry. If Sati goes, he'll still remember that, and there'll be some. He'll say something about it, and she'll be offended because he's offending her husband. How can she tolerate that in front of all the family? And then it'll be chaos. Exactly what happened. So he could predict that was going to happen. So he knows how the material world works. If you want to take part in the material world, if you want to leave your bhajan, if you want to leave the spiritual world, and take part in the material world, you've got to give your heart to it. At least sometimes. At least a bit of it. When you give your heart to it, that's it. As soon as you give your heart to it, this is for real. You know, you're going to do something, achieve something, be somebody, make something. That's it. As soon as you give your heart, then Maya's. Then now you have to pay back later on. Okay, now you've given something. You've committed yourself to Maya. Dum. Okay, now this much I will reciprocate back with you. And so then it starts to, the material world starts to do what it does, and just involve. You get more and more involved, and there's no way out. Materially, there's no way out. Like the tar baby. You ever heard of a tar baby? They make a baby out of tar. You know what tar is? What they put on the road? It's black and it's really yucky, sticky, really sticky. If it gets on you, it's very difficult to get off. You have to use petrol or something. So they make a baby with tar. So it's really cute, but as soon as you touch it, you get stuck. Then you go to push it off, your hand gets stuck. Then you push it up like that. The more you try to get away, the more you get stuck to it. Maya's like that, tar baby. So the more you try to get involved with Maya, then the more you get really involved. And then you begin to, intelligence becomes covered. Then you think, well, I better get out of this. And then you start to get out. The more you push, the more you get stuck. See, as those two aspects, Maya has two aspects of attraction and repulsion. But she also has this tree soul. So when you want to embrace Maya, she's holding a tree soul. Adi Atmik, Adi Devik, Adi Bultik. And you're like, oh, she's so nice. Adi Atmik, Adi Devik, Adi Bultik. Because you're trying to hold her close, you see. And when you're trying to fight her, also you're attacking. Defending means you're attacking. So also you're going into the three things altogether. So there's no chance of dealing with Maya. Only on her terms. That's the rule. If you want to deal with Maya, this is how it works. You give your heart, you steal the intelligence, and then play around with you. So then a devotee, he becomes indifferent to Maya. Like Lord Shiva's, he was indifferent to Maya. You can't just be indifferent, right? We're person, we're thinking, feeling, willing, living entities. You can't just be indifferent to everything. There has to be some subject. We're personal, we're not voidists. We're real people, thinking, feeling and willing. That's what we like to do. And that's a natural function. We can't stop it, even if we don't like to do it. But it's a natural thing, but we like to do it. But now, what are you going to think, feel and will for? What is your subject matter? There has to be a positive thing there. There has to be an alternative to Maya. You can't just be indifferent to Maya and be nothing. That's what the Mayavadis and the Buddhists want. They want to be indifferent to samsara, karma, modes of nature, and just because it's troublesome, because they can't enjoy it, they can't control it, it's always difficult, whatever you're trying to do, so then just switch it off. But then what? Their philosophy denies their own personal individual existence as a thinking, feeling and willing living entity. They deny that. You have to, otherwise what will you do when you switch off Maya? When you switch off the material, what will happen? You'll just be a vegetable, right? Nobody likes to be a vegetable. Nobody would like to be a vegetable now. If there's no sensation of thinking, feeling and willing, nobody would go for that. Even if there's peace, right? If you don't think, feel or will, there's no feelings, then it's, right? All your problems are solved. No more problems. But you wouldn't do it. You wouldn't give up that freedom of thinking, feeling and willing. You'd like to exist. You'd like to be a person. That's what we see. That's our experience. That's why we're always trying to put ourselves out, expand ourselves to expand our influence, to get friends and achieve things and be to love and be loved. This is what the world is all about, right? To experience these things. And how to experience things. So we wouldn't give up and experience nothing or just existence. Or the Buddhist is nothing. The Mayavada is something. I'm such an ananda. Not really, it's not even ananda, but they say it's ananda. It's just existence. So so there has to be something positive also. So you can experience what you want to experience, what we're looking for in the material world, right? A pleasure and the absence of any problems. That's what everyone's looking for. Nothing else. Nothing else. Then they're doing that in a variety of methods, how to achieve that. But that's what ultimately what everyone wants, those two things. Because they're very rare in this world. Happiness, peace and happiness are very rare in the material world. They're flickering. So we're always hankering for this. So this is Maya is pushing us. Or offering, here's peace, here's happiness, come. Or here's distress, so you have to avoid it. The material world is like that. Non-stop, 24 hours a day. Fall to sleep at night, exhausted, a little relief. Then you wake up in the morning and start again. Take a bath, take some food, put on fresh clothes, go and earn your bread. Do something to maintain all the things that you must have. Struggle, hard struggle. So where are you going to give your heart? So there has to be a positive alternative. Mind is in the heart, you see? Feeling is done within the heart. So where are you going to place your heart? This is the question. So unless there's information of the spiritual world and spiritual relationship, then it'd be very difficult to do that. So therefore we're hearing what is spiritual life? What is spiritual love? What is spiritual relationship? And now we're practicing in the stage of Vaidhi Sarana Bhakti, associate with devotees. Make friendship with the devotees, touch the body of devotees. Okay, non-devotee association. Give and receive presents. Reveal your mind in confidence. Give and accept prasadam. These are the loving exchanges that you... the activities that go on within the circle of devotees. And this is the practice to cultivate that loving sentiment. We're practicing now because this is the best we have. This is the positive alternative. Krishna consciousness is a positive alternative. Not just society, social life, but the whole material world altogether. It's not you want a better way of life. If you want to get out, you want a better existence. Values for a better world. We had a conference here once. Values for a better world. But that, we want a better, we don't want just a better world. We don't want want to develop a culture so that we can live peacefully. Okay, that's great. Who wants to grow old, sick and die peacefully? It's not a very good option, really. That peaceful society is a byproduct. Automatic byproduct of spiritual life. But in and of itself, what is the use? You get your, whether you're peaceful, whether it's a hellish society in Kali Yuga or a very cultured, peaceful society, everyone gets old, everyone gets sick, and everyone dies. And everyone takes birth again. So unless it's the, that's why the spiritual aspect is always considered important, the most important. So Daksha failed to recognize that in Lord Shiva, that actually he's the most elevated soul here. I should be bowing before him. He shouldn't be standing up to receive me. Because he's good in the material world, but in the spiritual world he's lost. He's covered. So then Srila Prabhupada was talking about the the difference of the material world and the spiritual world. It's very esoteric. The difference between pleasure and pain of this material world and that of the spiritual world is that in the spiritual world the effect is qualitatively absolute. We don't have an experience of this. Qualitatively absolute. Therefore, one may feel sorry in the absolute world, but the manifestation of pain is always full of bliss in the spiritual world. So it's these pastimes of Krishna, how they bring great pleasure to everyone, although they're pastimes of Mother Yasoda's angry, she's got a stick, Krishna's scared, she's chasing him, he's crying. They're like, it's a fearful situation. But they're both actually relishing. The Mother Yasoda's enjoying watching Krishna running away, and Krishna's fearful, but at the same time he's given his devotee's greatest pleasure. Here is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Creator. He's running around toddling around on little wobbly legs, and his mother's chasing him with a stick. He's the Almighty Supreme Creator. So he's given the devotee's great delight how he's become subordinate to the affection of his mother. Prabhupada goes on, the spiritual world where everything is pure is pervertedly reflected in the material world. Since everything in the spiritual world is absolute, in spiritual varieties of apparent pleasure and pain, there's no perception other than eternal bliss. I'll read that again. Since everything in the spiritual world is absolute, in the spiritual varieties of apparent pleasure and pain, there's no perception other than eternal bliss. In other words, the variety in the spiritual world, there's variety, and there seems to be a variety of pleasure and pain in the spiritual world. But because it's absolute, it's spiritual. Absolute, according to the dictionary, means unrestricted, or complete, or independent. Above relativity, that's the dictionary. So it means that, and that atmosphere is Satchit Ananda. There's nothing else there. Everything is going under that Satchit Ananda potency. So even when there's fear, apparent fear, what they're experiencing is the different aspects of that Satchit Ananda. It's nothing else. So even though they seem to be fearing, but the actual emotion is made of Satchit Ananda. But the symptoms look like fear or pain. The pain of separation we say the pain of separation is Kripalamba is actually the highest spiritual emotion. It's the most intense spiritual emotion. Because in separation or fear for Krishna's when Krishna's in danger, they all become fearful. They're almost dying. They're about to die. The devotee's about to. When Kaliya catches Krishna, for hours she's got him in her coils, little baby soft Krishna, the big black serpent, hissing, wrapped up tightly Krishna, for hours. They're just about to give up their lives because they love Krishna more than themselves. Then Krishna realizes his devotees they're not enjoying this anymore. So then he gives them pleasure, brings them all back to life. So that, because in that separation, when there's separation, then you can appreciate your love for that particular object, or your attachment to that particular object. Of course, we've forgotten the experience in the spiritual world. But like in mature world, it is like air. Right? If you fall in the Ganges underwater and you're struggling, then you realize that how important air is, how desperate you need air or food. You know, when there's no water, when the current goes off, you realize how dependent you are. And when you haven't got something, which is always available, then you realize how dependent you are on that thing, the material example. Oh, but in the case of love and emotions, when someone close to you, you're separated from someone close to you, then it's very painful. When someone very close to you dies, it's very painful. When they're not close to you, it's not painful, because hundreds of people are dying every day. It doesn't mean a thing, right? When you read it in a newspaper, hundreds and hundreds of people are dying. It doesn't mean a thing. But when someone close to you dies, then the whole world goes upside down. Right? Separation. Because then, at the time of separation, then you realize how much you do love them. But when you're with somebody, you become complacent. Right? So you don't realize the value of something when it's so easily available. It's like when we associate with devotees, one should be very cautious also. It's a very rare opportunity. Just imagine you was whisked away and you could never associate with any devotees anymore. You would never chant Hare Krishna anymore. It's like in Russia that time, when the communist regime, they would take the devotees, put them in a jail, they wouldn't let them see them, they'd take away their beads, they would take away their books, they wouldn't let them do anything like that. So it's a horrible situation. So you can imagine, just imagine, if you could never associate with devotees again, never come and see Krishna in the temple again, never, it would be horrible. If you think about it, it'd be horrible. Because, and as much affection as we have for Krishna and devotees, in that degree we would feel horrible. We would feel suffering like anything. So we can get kind of examples, but they're not the real thing, like in the spiritual world, because there is no actual misery there. There is no actual suffering. that separation, that intense, that love in separation or anguish that, you know, Krishna may be put into difficulty, then that brings to the prominence of your consciousness how much Krishna means to you, how much this person means to you. And that's painful, because now you can't express your love to him anymore. He's in this situation. And but when he's not going to be around anymore, when there's danger, when Krishna's going to be swallowed by a snake, then your whole life is finished. You know, realization comes how dear Krishna is to you, how much you do love him. And that's unbearable. It's actually unbearable. But what you're experiencing is your love is the realization of how much love you actually have for Krishna. How much attachment or love you have for somebody. That's what that point is, that point of suffering is. It brings to the forefront, this is it. It may not happen anymore. You may not be able to deal anymore. I mean, have loving exchanges anymore. That's painful. Then you realize how great that love is, or relationship is. Therefore, it's so painful. But it's not actually pain. It's that love intensified. I don't know how you can explain it. It can't be explained. It has to be experienced. One example the Acharyas give, if someone puts ice on your back, if you don't know what it is, it feels like someone's cutting you. Or sometimes it feels hot, like it's burning. Someone runs a piece of ice down your back, hey, I've cut you. And you think it is, because the water's melting and it feels like that. Or sometimes they put ice on you and it feels like it's burning. It's actually extremely cold, but you don't know what it is. And you're it feels like burning. So the symptoms of what is, that these devotees are actually suffering like anything. Their expressions and everything. But they're feeling intense pleasure. So intense that it's so unusual, that intensified pleasure, that they can't they can't deal with it. They're not used to dealing with it in this intensity of pleasure. So means unrestricted, the absolute world. So therefore, that's the difference between Sati and Shiva. Of course, Prabhupada said, although Lord Shiva, he was Atmarama, because he is dealing with the mode of ignorance and destruction, then sometimes he gives himself to it a bit because it's his job, and he does feel sorry for the situation. So in that way he gets affected. Otherwise, generally he's not affected. if you can be affected that much, that's nothing at all. He's just feeling sorry for the situation. So then we learn from this that no matter how proper we are in our behavior, no matter how nicely we follow all our sadhana, we haven't, developed attachment to Krishna, which automatically detachment from the material situation comes, then we have more to go. So that's why these stories are here, so we can learn from the, take these examples and apply them to our consciousness and apply them to our lives also. Shrimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Shri Prabhupada ki jai. Jai Gopinandi. Hari Hari Gopinandi. Sati Mataji ki jai. Any comments or questions on this topics?
Hare Krishna, Pankajangri Prabhu.
Hare Krishna, Sauda Dulal Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. I was thinking with Sati, she represents the material energy, or is that a manifestation of Maya Devi? And so it appears like she was bewildered, or she fell down to the emotional level of getting involved in such a situation with her father and whatnot. So is she being bewildered by her own energy, Maya energy, or is that Krishna covering her in some way, so she acts in such a way?
Well, that could always be there, that Krishna is, for the sake of the Bhagavatam, then you can see it like that everything will be pastime. But she wasn't bewildered in as much as, she hadn't seen her family for 1,000 years, maybe. It was quite, I guess, she's quite detached. And this was a big happening. And what's the harm in going? What's the harm in going there and being with everyone else? So it wasn't like, she was thrown by Maya. It was, she was just doing what the women do, as we, according to the Swami, that's how they behave.
So that emotional feeling what one may feel, that can actually be quite bona fide and can work in this world. By having emotional sentiment, one can express that without.
Yeah, that's what all this program is for. It's for those really pious people who need that outlet, who need society, friendship, and love. But it's a sacrifice based around Vishnu. The problem was, Shiva picked up on that Daksha wouldn't forget that enmity, and he would bring it up, and that would spoil the whole thing. Otherwise, it was perfectly bona fide. The best thing is the best behavior one could be on, religious pious activity. If someone wants to live in the material world, that was a, at that time that was the best thing to do. She wasn't specifically a tapasvi. She has other form of tapasvi, but she was more or less a princess and very chaste to Lord Shiva, and he was avadut, so she was living like that. But at the same time, she still had her own personality. But it was perfect. The situation was perfect. If you're going to go to a happening, and that happening should be a spiritual, a religious spiritual activity based around Vishnu, which it was, I would imagine. I would imagine it was to satisfy Vishnu and these high class people. So it's a perfect situation. In the mature world, you couldn't get better, you see. But just that there's that ego problem between Daksha and Shiva. That's why Shiva advised not to go. He was aloof, but he knew it's a mature world. You put your finger in, it's going to get burned. But otherwise, if that wasn't there, probably, you know, maybe Shiva would also have went. He was supposed to go. There was supposed to be a seat for him as one of the leaders. He went before, right? I mean, he was there at that time before. So it wasn't improper not to go. That's not our... he could do that. He's like Avadhut. He's Atmarama. He understands his relationship with Krishna. He doesn't need the material world. He doesn't need to do anything. He's perfectly satisfied. But for those who are not on that platform, then those needs of society, friendship and love, how to express your thinking, feeling, willing, then this was the best situation to be in. It was the best. So it wasn't like she was in Maya or something like that.
Here it's explained that Lord Shiva is touched by the material nature to some small degree, that sometimes he feels sorry. He is feeling sorrow for the situation. So when I hear this, I say, well, Lord Shiva, who's the greatest Vaishnava, he's sometimes touched by the modes of material nature, then what is my chance not to become free from the gunas? In other words, to be free, become free from the mode of passion, the mode of ignorance, the mode of goodness, if I have any. So I'm wondering, you know, like I don't know if I'm asking a question, but I'm wondering, what is our chances of becoming free from the three gunas?
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. Maybe that's why Lord Shiva does it, to keep us like this, to keep us humble. Otherwise, no hope. How can you come free from Maya? How can we come free from Maya? Devyeshu Gunamaya. Krishna's prime energy in the material world. How can we become free from his primordial energy in the material world? Not possible. By your own endeavor. By the mercy of Krishna, then it can be done. We can endeavor to follow the program, how to become attached to Krishna so that we're automatically detached from matter. Otherwise, if you want to become detached from matter, there's also programs. Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga. If you want to do it yourself, if you want to try and become detached, then follow those programs. The path of bhakti is a positive thing. You just serve Krishna. Then automatically you're not serving. But anyway, whichever one you take, ultimately, over and above our individual endeavor, is the mercy of the Lord. And when he's satisfied, then he can just tell Maya to stay away, that's all. Otherwise, no hope of individually combating Maya. So, here, the greatest Vaishnava, he's feeling something there. So that's also for our understanding. We'll do this, Vrindavan Devadasi, from the airways.
Very well. If Lord Shiva, he is always in such meditation and such a great devotee of Krishna, how come sometimes he has a battle with Krishna and he fights with Krishna? We see there in the scriptures that they sometimes engage in fighting.
Then I don't know those stories. There are quite a few stories with different Puranas.
Trying to protect his devotees.
Huh?
He was trying to protect his devotees.
Oh, Shiva?
Yes.
Yeah. Like Lord Brahma was trying to protect his devotee, Hiranyakashipu. And Sringadev said, don't be so generous with your benedictions. You put me on a spot, you know. It can't be killed by day and night, land, sea, right? So I had to do some quick thinking. So, anyway, that's... At the end of the day, we understand that, at least in our Puranas, in the Bhagavat Purana, that Lord Shiva is subordinate to Vishnu. He worships Lord Vishnu. So even if he may battle with Vishnu, even if he may beat Vishnu, at the end of the day, he's a devotee of Vishnu. That's, he's admitting that. So even if some pastimes they have fights and Shiva wins, in different Puranas they may mention like that. But he's known as the greatest. He's known as the greatest Vaishnava, and he's not inimical towards Vishnu. So his consciousness is not affected, even though the display, the outward display of having a battle kind of thing. But he's never inimical towards Vishnu. He's not an enemy of Vishnu, you see. So he may have some. There may be some other causes that he has to do it. He has to take part in that battle. But he's. You know, we understand it. He's always aloof, he's always favorable, and he's always a devotee of Vishnu. Whatever else happens. So we follow that example. Whatever happens to us in the material world, we don't forget. We don't become un-Krishna conscious. We remember Krishna in happiness and distress, whatever goes on, whatever we have to do by voluntary or by force, we're forced to do by this circumstance, we won't forget Krishna in that. And that's our saving grace. Because we're in the material world, we've taken birth here, we're obliged, we're attached, and we got to go through the role. You got to go through, you know, being born, growing up and doing stuff and leaving again. You can't avoid that. You've got to do something. You have to act, and you have to take on some role in this world. But whatever it is, and there'll be so many different circumstances which we're going to come our way, as long as our consciousness is not too much affected, as long as, at least, if we're dependent on Krishna, at least if we can remember Krishna, whatever else happens, that's what we have to learn. Now, if we can remember him all the time, that's first class. But the material world is not going to stop. Even if we become a pure devotee, I mean, if we become a really good devotee, the material world is not going to stop. Right? You're going to get up in the morning, do your stuff, you're going to have interaction with people, you're going to have pleasant and unpleasant experiences sometimes. It's unavoidable. So even if you're a great devotee, but a great devotee means whatever goes on, they're more or less indifferent to that. Just going on, it's only a show, right? The life is only a dramatic performance. That's all. As long as we don't get involved in our role, in the role we're playing, as long as we don't believe it, then we're okay. But when we start to believe, you know, this is our role, this is what it means, bodily identification, identifying with your body and your position. Then that overwhelms us, we forget who we are and what we're really supposed to be doing. So Shiva's taking part in the whole program. Everyone's doing the same thing. So he's taking part, but he's not forgetting. He's not forgetting his role. He's not forgetting who he is, and he's not taking all this stuff as absolute for real. He knows it's just... he knows he's an actor. We're actors, but sometimes we forget we're actors and we think it's for real. Even Krishna forgets.
Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, through his own example, taught us to worship Krishna in the mood of separation. So every day we stand in front of the deities and we worship the deities every day. How at the same time we worship the deities, we can cultivate the mood of separation to the Lord. Because the deity is non-different from Krishna himself.
You wouldn't cultivate the mood of separation, I don't think.
how can we feel we feel separation from the law?
Oh, that'll come automatically. When what we're trying to cultivate is love of Krishna.